On this week's podcast, I am super excited to share with you my conversation with Ryan Blazer. Ryan is an electromagnetic engineer, a building biologist, and he came to my house in Costa Rica. I have optimized so many things in my life. I optimize my morning sunlight. I go out and I touch the grass with my grounding. I go in the ocean in the morning. My diet is so controlled. It's only organic, regenerative foods, glyphosate-free honey. I still wasn't quite dialed in my sleep. It wasn't as restorative as I wanted it to be. So I thought, is there something in my house that I need to know about? Mold or electrical wiring errors? Or how much EMF am I actually exposed to from my Wi-Fi router? Is there a way that I can mitigate this? Does my grounding mat actually work on my bed? So Ryan came to my house and he did a full, thorough investigation. In this podcast, you're going to hear about everything we found, how to fix it. And a lot of the take homes from this podcast are things that you can do at your own house without even having someone like Ryan come out and inspect it. You can change the routing on your Wi-Fi if you want to hardwire. You can get your grounding mat dialed in the way it's supposed to be. You can avoid all sorts of mold issues just by knowing what's going on in your home. You can do all these things in your home and improve the quality of your life. Your environment matters. None of this is meant to be overwhelming to you. It's meant to be empowering. Knowledge is power. Enjoy this podcast with Ryan Blazer. And I'm happy to report that since making the changes we talked about in this podcast, my sleep feels like it's definitely improved significantly. I'm not having trouble falling back to sleep when I wake up in the middle of the night. I definitely am so grateful for him coming out and would recommend check him out if you have any of these issues at your house or you want to get him to come check out your stuff in person. I learned so much. It was so worth it. And every house that I buy or rent or build from now on, I'm going to be thinking about these issues as I'm building the house, depending where I build it, Costa Rica, wherever. You learn so much about environment. And I think this is a key piece that a lot of us are missing in our lives and it affects us more than we know. EMF is not just the stuff of tinfoil hats, guys. It actually affects us. And you'll learn all about it in this podcast. Enjoy this podcast with Ryan Blazer. Ryan Blazer, thanks for coming on the podcast, brother.
Yeah, you bet, man.
It's good to have you here. We have had a very enlightening 28 hours together. We're going to talk about this on the podcast. I'm going to give the audience a little bit of background so they understand what you're doing here. So I live in Costa Rica. The audience can't see it, but I'm super grateful for this amazing view of the jungle and the ocean. I get up every morning, I look at the sunlight, I ground, and I think I have so many things dialed in my life. I think about my food. Most of the audience knows I eat organs, I eat meat, I eat fruit, I eat honey that's local, I eat raw goat's milk. And despite all these things, being careful with blue light at night, not looking at my phone at night, going to sleep at embarrassingly early times, which I will not talk about in this podcast. Let's say that the number of when I go to sleep is less than 9 and greater than 7, but could be 8 or sometimes 7:45. I still have some sleep stuff that's bugging me, meaning that for me personally, I've been kind of like, I don't have trouble going to sleep, but I wake up in the middle of the night and sometimes have trouble going back to sleep. And so I had a mutual friend of ours, text me and say, Ryan came out to my house and he found some interesting stuff at this gentleman's house. And we'll talk about what you found at his house in this podcast. But it was some stuff with the electrical wiring, which may have even affected this gentleman's dog negatively and caused cancer in the dog. And we'll get to all that in this podcast. But I thought, shit, okay. I've got a mostly open air house in Costa Rica. I basically live in like a nice tree house in Costa Rica, which is kind of cool. And so I thought, well, it's mostly open air. What's actually going to be wrong with my house? But I wanted you to come out and take a look. And so we've been basically like really figuring out what's going on in my house. And it's been super enlightening. So with all that said, that's why you're here. And I appreciate all the investigations. We're going to talk about all the things we looked at in the house. But I wanted to start with this. After all the things we've thought about, one of the most striking things that I've realized is the answer to this question. I'm going to let you answer it. But what is the biggest exposure that most of us have in the realm of EMF, like all of these toxins in our environment, right? So we looked at mold, we looked at electricity, we looked at radio frequency, magnetic, right? All these things. It seems to me like, I'll ask you, what is the biggest exposure that most of us have?
I would say, bar none, the biggest exposure is gonna be mold exposure. It's around in our environment all over the place. We're all exposed to some level of mold. Some people can tolerate a lot more and some people it ends up making them really sick.
And unfortunately, we found mold at my house, which I want to talk about. And what I was thinking is that for me, one of my biggest exposures is also the cell phone. And so I wanted to, let's also start. So let's bookmark the mold and let's start with the cell phone. We are going to put some video clips that we're going to record after this podcast into this podcast on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So people can see us actually showing what kind of radiation is coming off a cell phone, but let's just start with the cell phone. Mm-hmm. This is a lot of exposure that most of us are getting. It's something that a lot of us put in our pockets a lot. It's something that I put in my car on the way to surf and I turn on Bluetooth. And there's no cell service at my house, so I don't have cell on my phone, but I have Wi-Fi on and Bluetooth. Like, talk to me about the exposure that we see in my cell phone here at the house and what how this is affecting a lot of people. Just the fact that you're so close to this thing all the time.
Yeah, you know, if you would ask what's the second right there, it would have been cell phone, because I think mold and cell phone are probably neck and neck on the race of doing the most damage to us as biological beings. And the reason is when it comes to overall EMF exposure, we want to look at three different factors. It's kind of like a little triangle. One of them is the strength of the source. How powerful is the source? How long are we next to this source? And then how close are we to the source? Now, unfortunately, the cell phone checkbox, all three of those off. We have it within arm's reach, probably 24 hours a day. It's very powerful. In most cases, it has to transmit miles to the nearest cell tower. And we're around this thing all the time, like nonstop.
But Ryan, I heard Elon Musk on Joe Rogan's podcast say that I could make a helmet out of cell phones and it wouldn't hurt me.
So what concerns people is the unknown, right? They hear about 5G and then they hear about radiation. And they're like, wait a minute, is this safe? What are we doing? Are we just ruining everything? Are we ruining?
No, it's fine.
Fine.
Totally fine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now I feel good about my 5G phone.
If you had a helmet that was made of cell phones, you'd be fine.
I disagree with that.
So do I.
I think there's a lot of studies that disagree with that as well. I think there's a lot of people out there that have used cell phone a lot in their life and now develop brain tumors. And I think they would also disagree with that. So I just think that's kind of ignorant to say that, especially with the amount of studies and information we have now.
So let's talk about a cell phone and the type of radiation coming off a cell phone and maybe some of those levels. We can talk about the numbers. We'll put in a clip showing you testing my cell phone near my body with these numbers. But what are we talking about? What's coming off a cell phone? Are EMFs real? Are these just like fairy dust unicorn farts? Are they real things that affect us as humans? And what's coming off my cell phone?
Yeah, you know, the debate over whether EMFs are dangerous or not is long over. It's been answered that yes, EMF is dangerous to us. The debate now is at what level is it dangerous and for how long can we be exposed? And that has a whole range of variabilities to it that it's hard to pin down. And that's where all the argument is. There are still levels that the government puts in place for magnetic fields, electric fields, and radio frequencies that they state, yes, if you go over these certain exposure levels, you will do detrimental harm to your body. You will develop cancer. You will cook your body from the inside out. So those studies, those things have been well established back in the 40s and 50s. So that's nothing new. The argument now is we have a whole group of scientists and doctors saying, look, we need to be really cautious with this stuff. We need to take the precautionary principle that we don't know for sure at these lower levels for extended period of time exactly what this is going to do to the body. So let's be cautious about it and let's put our numbers low. But then we have the FCC and the telecom industry and the communication industry. They say, look, man, we can go all the way up to 2.5 million till we start to notice a measurable rise in temperature of the body. Essentially, it means it's starting to cook us. So we say, look, we can go up to here until it starts to cook the body. And then we got the doctor and the health people. No, we need to stay down here at about 10 microwatts. So at least for me and my family and my clients, I try to advise, let's stay below 10 microwatts per meter squared for our overall exposure. Now, the problem is a lot of the cell phones, the Wi-Fi router, the laptops, they're well above that into the millions of range a lot of times when they're close to the body.
So we'll also talk about the Wi-Fi router, which is pretty similar to a cell phone, and the computer, which is kind of similar to a cell phone. So the units we're using here are microwatts per square meter.
Yep.
And we'll put a clip into the podcast, but you can put your hippy dippy meter, which is not, I'm joking, you know, you can put your Wi-Fi detector, which is all pseudoscience, of course. No, it's actual real physics, guys, up to my cell phone. And when I turn on the cell antenna, it goes to 2.5 million microwatts per square meter, right up to the cell phone, right?
Right.
As if I were holding that thing next to my head, I would have 2.5 million microwatts per square meter. And that's just an arbitrary number. It sounds like a big number, but what you said to me, which helps clarify it, is that at 2.5 microwatts per square meter, you're actually able to measure increase in temperature of the tissue that it's next to. And that the signal in the Wi-Fi router at least, and I don't know about the cell phone, is 2.4 gigahertz, right?
Correct.
And that is the same wavelength or frequency. That's a frequency.
Frequency.
That's a frequency. That's the same frequency that you're getting in a microwave oven.
Right.
So my Wi-Fi router and my cell phone are kind of like little microwave ovens.
Correct.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And what's crazy is that 2.4 gigahertz is open source, which means you don't have a license to transmit it. So that's why cordless phones, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, the microwave, it all uses this frequency because it's open access. Now, the problem with that is it's the most biologically active with the body. And the reason that microwaves use that frequency is because it'll violently resonate the water molecule so hard that it heats up. And that's how it cooks our food. Well, unfortunately, we're made up of water as well. So when we're next to this 2.4 gigahertz, it's reacting with the water molecules inside of our body.
Now, what about 5 gigahertz? I've heard all sorts of crazy things about 5G, man. If you believe what's on the internet, there was a viral pandemic caused by 5G, which I don't think happened. But so, like, what's the difference between 2.4 gigahertz and 5G, 5 gigahertz?
So it's just twice the frequency.
So it's twice the frequency.
Yeah.
And you said, do you think 5G is the worst thing in the world for humans? Is it kind of just the same as 2.4 gigahertz?
There's definitely a lot of stuff that's blown way out of proportion
with 5G.
5G thing. Yeah, for sure. I think it's just another tooth on the shark. It's all dangerous to me. Anything that's not natural to the body, being our heart beats, that puts out an energy. We can measure that with a machine. Our brain puts off frequencies. We can measure that with EKG machine. Our whole body communicates through our cellular nervous system. Now, anytime we're going to put an artificial frequency, overlay that, and expose our body to that, we're going to cause undue stress. We're going to cause inflammation. We're going to cause a whole range of different issues with the body. So if we say, is this frequency or this frequency more dangerous? Not necessarily. It's more about the strength of the signal and how long we're in that field. And are we grounding? And what other things are we doing to our body? Because someone that's in very good condition, that's grounding, that's exercising, that's eating healthy, can obviously take a lot more environmental stressors than someone that's already sick or that's struggling with their health, that's not feeling well. Those type of people, they need to be a lot more careful when it comes to it. So there's not really like a golden standard rule that says you need to stick to this. It's kind of pretty broad.
The missing piece. Check out this review on grass-fed colostrum from Heart and Soil Supplements. I was experiencing issues with digestion, had to take a pre and probiotic every week just to keep a normal bowel movement. I was mostly animal-based for nearly a year, which took away chest pain and headaches, but I still had to take probiotics and didn't quite understand what was happening. I eventually found grass-fed colostrum from Heart and Soil Supplements and decided to give it a try. I combined it with gut and digestion and a banana blueberry smoothie 3 times a week. My bowel movements are finally normal again, and my stomach isn't bloating anymore. This is something I've been trying to fix for 1.5 years, and I've been animal-based for 1 year before I stumbled on this supplement. I'm thankful to God, to Paul, and the Heart and Soil team for giving me something I've been praying for the longest. I hope that Paul starts talking about the benefits of colostrum on his platforms more, because it's mostly meat and organs he talks about. I'm very curious how the supplement had such a profound effect on my body. I was literally about to go to the doctor and agree to whatever surgery or process they would throw at me just to have a normal bowel movement again. Heart and Soil helped me avoid that trip. Thank you. So I am really proud of all the supplements we do at Heart and Soil. Colostrum is probably one of the most underrated ones that we have. Colostrum is the first milk from cows. All of our colostrum is from grass-fed, grass-finished, regeneratively raised cattle in New Zealand. And the little calves, baby cows, get plenty of colostrum. It's the extra colostrum we use that we freeze-dry to make this supplement. It's very hard to get good colostrum in this country. You can't get it from farmers. But colostrum is the first milk from cows. It's full of immunoglobulins, full of bioactive peptides. It's full of immune components that are given to the baby. And a lot of people with gut issues find improvements when they add colostrum to their diet. There have been multiple studies with colostrum. So many peer-reviewed, randomized, placebo-controlled trials with colostrum showing benefits in humans. And with doses as small as 1 gram or 2 of colostrum, our colostrum is freeze-dried. The recommended dose is 3 grams of freeze-dried colostrum, which is equivalent to a little bit less than 1 tablespoon of colostrum. So that is definitely an effective dose according to the research. And so if you have issues with your gut or you want help with recovery or energy, check out our grass-fed colostrum from Heart and Soil Supplements. All of our supplements are packaged in glass because plastic is bullshit. I don't believe in putting any more plastic into the environment. You can find all of our supplements at heartandsoil.co. Again, I'm super proud of what we do because it's from New Zealand. All the cows in New Zealand are the highest quality, not to be confused with cows from other parts of the world like Chile and Argentina. Those cows are not as high quality. There's almost like CAFO agriculture down there with grass feeding. It's ridiculous, but New Zealand, Australian cattle, amazing. I recently went there and it is so good to see the quality of the cattle that we're using in our supplements. Check us out, heartandsoil.co. Back to the podcast.
What kind of symptoms
do you see in people who are electrically sensitive to EMFs, for instance, right? Like, mm-hmm. what kind of symptoms do people get if they're sitting near a router too much, or their overall health, their you know, their allostatic load is the technical term of just the overall stress bucket is too much, and they're working next to a Wi-Fi router, or they've decided to like sleep next to a Wi-Fi router, or they're putting their cell phone next to their head while they're sleeping because they don't want to miss their text from their boyfriend or girlfriend, and they've got it on full cell service. Like, what kind of symptoms do some people who are electrically sensitive get?
So, you know, just speaking from my own personal experience, my personal symptom is brain fog. When I'm around too much EMF and too much technology, I feel like my brain just doesn't work as good. It's hard to come up with the words. I'm not thinking as clearly. My wife's symptom is more irritability. When she's on the laptop or the computer too long, she gets a little more irritable. She can recognize, like, I got to put this down and take a walk. Don't talk to me right now. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, we thought she had severe ADD. We're at the point where we're going to have to get her on some Ritalin or some drugs or whatever. You know, it was about 8 years ago. We went completely Wi-Fi free in our home, EMF free, and we saw a difference overnight with her and her thinking ability. So I would say there's a lot of the neurological type issues when we're dealing with radio frequency exposure, the brain fog, the irritability, the ADHD, like the Alzheimer's type symptoms, and then sleeping as well. It can affect the sleep patterns.
Now, before you came out here, I was turning my Wi-Fi off at night, and I put my cell phone on a charger, which is probably 20 feet from my bed. But we'll make a little video of this. Fucker, is it? Goddamn Apple. I didn't have the Bluetooth all the way off. I don't think it was really affecting me because I was far away. But there's like a little set, like just because I hit the little icon on my iPhone and it goes white doesn't mean the Bluetooth is off. You have to go to settings and turn your Bluetooth off. You showed me that. But still, I was having some sleep issues, and we can talk about, we'll get to in the podcast what I think might be causing those or might have been worsening those. But let's just go a little deeper in this, because it was really interesting for me to understand with my computer how much radiation I was getting from my computer. People might have heard, okay, my cell phone has radiation. Maybe they heard someone talk about a study, and I believe there are studies showing that if you put your cell phone in your pants, it can reduce sperm counts and potentially testosterone. This is not pseudoscience. This is not like hippy-dippy, I don't know, stuff. You know, this is not fairy dust and unicorns, and this is not, we're going to talk about vibes, but this is like actual physics and science, right? But like, it's interesting, we measured, and we'll put a video of this, we measured my computer, right? So when the Wi-Fi is on at my house, we measured the Wi-Fi router, 2.4 million microwatts per square meter right at the Wi-Fi router, right?
Yep.
And then you go back, and I'm using Wi-Fi on my computer, which means my computer has to have the Wi-Fi antenna on. I had the Bluetooth antenna on my computer on. And what kind of stuff did we see at my computer that I'm sitting by right in front of? I don't use it on my lap, but I'm sitting in front of it for hours a day.
Yeah. So again, it's proximity. And so we start getting further away from the router, it goes down, but now we start getting close to your laptop and your devices, and it starts to go back up again. And so when you're sitting there at the laptop, you're usually exposed to about 20 to 40,000, depending on how far you are from the screen.
20 to 40,000 microwatts per square meter.
Yes.
And you really think this should be like less than 10?
Ideally, some of the studies that are coming out are saying that when we're less than 10, that we think that there's a good chance that we're not getting a lot of long-term harm from that.
10 to 40,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Just so people understand, like, the difference here in terms of, and 2.5 million, 10 to 2.5 million at the router, 2.5 million when the phone is in my hand, at my ear, which I don't do, but it can be at someone's ear, in your pocket. Okay. So there's like massive orders of magnitude here in what we want. And so I had an EMF blocking mat under my computer. But you said that's just going to reflect it right back up in my face.
Right. So it acts like a mirror. So anytime we have a conductive surface, radio frequency will hit that. It will reflect off just like light would reflect off a mirror. So depending on where that's positioned. So if it's sitting on your lap, it might be protecting your nuts, but it's not protecting your face or your body, because what's happening is it's hitting that and reflecting back up.
It's so interesting because, you know, whenever I see like guys on my team working with their computer on their lap, I'm like, man, you can't do that. You're frying your nuts. And we've done content on that. We'll probably do some more content about people using cell phones or laptops or iPads. And the amount of radiation coming off of those, it's going right into your ovaries or testicles. Mm-hmm. It's pretty significant. And so I thought I was doing a good thing with the EMF blocking mat, but it's just reflecting all that right up back into my face.
Yes.
That's crazy. Okay. And so this is where I want to talk about some solutions briefly, and then we'll get into them. So what we did was we hardwired my Wi-Fi. Or we hardwired my internet, I should say, right? And I've realized this in the past, that if you run an Ethernet cable from your router to your computer, you will look like a Neanderthal and a troglodyte, but you will reduce the amount of radiation in your hand, in your home, because you can turn the Wi-Fi off on your router. And that's a little complex. We can talk about that too. But so then what we measured, and we'll put this all in a video in the YouTube, and we'll put it on the podcast also, is we can turn the Wi-Fi antenna off on my computer, and we can turn the Bluetooth antenna off on my computer, and I'm still getting a computer that works, right? I can use Ethernet on the computer. I have internet on the computer. All of my stuff that comes to the internet works. I can get iMessage on my computer. What was the signal, or like, do you remember what we were measuring when everything was off and I was hardwired to my router?
Yeah, I think we were around between 100 to 200. So we went from 20,000 to 40,000 down to around 100 to 200, depending on where you are in
that range. And that's just crazy that you can reduce it, you know, 100x, 1000x in a lot of cases, and just significantly reduce that by hardwiring it. Now, if people want to do this, you can just get, what did you recommend? Cat 6 coaxial cables on Amazon.
Cat 6 network cables, shielded. Yeah, and you know what I find when a lot of my clients actually do this and hardwire their computer and then turn off Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, is that they're able to work for longer periods and be a lot more productive. And we're just seeing this across the board. So yeah, you might look like a Neanderthal, but you know what? You're gonna get a lot more work done, you're gonna be a lot more productive, and when you are done with work, you're not gonna feel fully drained.
When I was in medical school, I did this. I bought like 3 Ethernet cables for my house in Tucson, Arizona, and I shut the Wi-Fi off, and my roommates were like, they just went into a panic. They were, what the, we can't use Wi-Fi? And I was like, no Wi-Fi in the house. And we had these cables running. It was so, it looked so ugly, but there's ways to do it. I had these huge cables running to each of their rooms. And every time I went, I was like out of the house, I'd come back and they'd snuck in and turn the Wi-Fi back on the router. So if somebody wants to do this, it was, what is it? 192.168.0.1 or 192.168.1.1 is the website. You go to that on your computer and you can get into your router and put the admin and the password, and you can actually physically turn off the Wi-Fi from your computer, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay, and we're still trying to figure that out, but that's a technical hack for you guys. If you want to hardwire your computer, you can go into the router, turn off the Wi-Fi from your computer, and hardwire. So at your house in Idaho, you're completely hardwired. You have no Wi-Fi in your house.
Completely, completely EMF-free. No Bluetooth, no Wi-Fi, nothing.
Your kids hate you?
No, because they've grown up like that.
That's amazing.
So they don't know any better.
I love it. How do you guys use cell phones in a house like that? Because there's a way to do this too, right?
Yeah. So with my cell phone, I have Google Voice, an app put on there, and I ported my phone into Google Voice. So that way when I'm at my desk or in my house, I can hardwire my phone just like we do with a laptop, and then I can still receive texts and calls. But I try to do a lot of any of the stuff I'm going to do on the web, I try to do just from my laptop. I try not to use my phone as minimal as possible. So just when I'm out on the road, keep in touch with my family if I need to, you know, check text. But a lot of times it's on airplane mode. I'm with a client. I'm traveling. Try to keep it on airplane mode as much as possible and just try not to be connected. And I think there's a lot of other benefits from that as well. Mentally, you know, phone is a big addiction. And it's really a big habit thing for people just to pull out, get on their phone and start scrolling. I think if you don't look at your phone as a source of entertainment and look at more of like a communication lifeline, and then you treat it as such, and then it kind of your attitude towards it will change.
So it was interesting for me that I'm going to try and do this at my house in Costa Rica because I want to experiment with these things and share it with my audience. But I'm going to try and get my Wi-Fi off and hardwire the whole house. Anytime friends come over, they're going to make fun of me, but they're going to feel really good, I think, because they're not going to be getting hit by these 2.4 gigahertz signals all the time at the house. But it was interesting that I could get an adapter on Amazon, which was a Lightning to Ethernet adapter. So I can actually plug my phone into an Ethernet cable.
Yes. Correct.
I don't think a lot of people realize that. I mean, I think a lot of people are just like shaking their heads now. I'm never going to do this. But if you wanted to, you could plug your phone into a Ethernet cable and you don't even need to use your phone. You can have your phone completely on airplane mode and still get texts, calls, because you can do Wi-Fi calling.
Yep. Correct.
So will I, Zach is joining us again. If my phone theoretically is hardwired to an Ethernet cable and I turn on Wi-Fi calling on my phone, I can then make a phone call through the internet.
Not necessarily. That's why you need to have Google Voice.
Oh, okay.
Because Google Voice is an internet-based app that allows you to do text and calling. Otherwise, you can't do Wi-Fi over calling through the Ethernet. You got to use Google Voice or like WhatsApp or Signal. One of those internet-based apps will allow you to communicate.
Interesting. Because people may not know this, but if you are in a place like Costa Rica or any place in Central or South America or anywhere where you don't get cell service, you can be on Wi-Fi and turn on Wi-Fi calling on your phone and actually make a call through the Wi-Fi.
Right.
That's something you can do. But this is interesting. If you use Google Voice or these other apps, you can make a call through the internet-based services and you don't actually need to have Wi-Fi on at all.
Correct.
That's a lot of power if people want to go that direction. So that's, and that can affect things, I think, pretty interestingly. So let's just talk about travel real quickly, because I'm thinking like, okay, shit, I go to Airbnbs. Like, am I just gonna travel with an Ethernet cable now? There were a couple other things you recommended for travel in terms of Wi-Fi routers and stuff. What can I think about for that?
So, you know, when I go on Airbnbs or go into places where I stay, I always try to look what's around the sleeping area. I'm not going to make it perfect, but I just make sure there's no router, cameras or anything, and all that stuff. I can unplug it when I'm in there so I don't need to use it. I've had, you know, Airbnb owners call me up and say, hey, is there something wrong with the internet? I noticed it's not active. Yeah, we're unplugging it. You know, it's a Glade plug-in. There's all kinds of stuff in these, you know, where you got to fix some of this stuff. So it is kind of hard with travel, but they do make it's called a signal tamer. It's a bag that you can put over the router or over some of these wireless devices that will lower the signal or reduce the signal.
Yeah. So I'm thinking when I go to Airbnbs, and there's so many pieces of this that we're going to talk about with Airbnbs. When I go to Airbnbs, I'm going to bring an Ethernet cable, plug it into the Wi-Fi, try and figure out how to turn the Wi-Fi off, maybe use one of these signal tamer bags to put over the Wi-Fi mm-hmm. router or turn the Wi-Fi router off at night. And that's just the beginning. You know, mm-hmm. I've talked in the past about fragrances and all this stuff. And when I go to Airbnbs, I ask them not to wash the sheets and anything with fragrance, et cetera. Now, you actually own an Airbnb outside of Boise, right?
Yep.
That's crazy. And your Airbnb, this is so interesting because I really want people to know about your Airbnb, because if they're around Boise, they should go check it out. I've never been there, but if I ever go to Boise for anything, I'm definitely staying at your Airbnb. And I want you to be able to scale this, because I wish Airbnb had a certification like we were talking about, where it's a mold-free home, it's an EMF-free home. What did you do to your Airbnb in Boise that makes it special?
Yeah, so obviously mold-free, we make sure that there's no mold growing. We test regularly. We have air purification system. We have water purification system. We use organic sheets, organic bedding. We use vinegar and water for our cleaning supplies. We don't use any fragrances in there. We do a really good deep clean. It does have a crawl space, which we deep clean the crawl space as well, which is something a lot of people don't do. And we don't allow shoes inside. It's a real quiet place. The outside background EMFs are really low. And so we've made it a really, truly health sanctuary. So if you're in Boise, the name of it's Meridian Zen. So you can Airbnb search Meridian Zen. It should come up.
And I would be so stoked if there were some sort of a certification, like a mold-free home or a low EMF home or a no fragrance home on Airbnb, because I stay in Airbnbs when I travel because I want to be able to cook. I can't stay in a hotel. I have to be able to cook. I don't want to go to restaurants and deal with seed oils all the time and et cetera. And so I want to be able to cook, and it's just very hard to find Airbnbs for me that are up to snuff. And I've had all sorts of bad experiences with them, a few decent experiences, but mostly bad experiences. So it's been pretty challenging. Okay. So we talked about cell phones. We talked about Wi-Fi routers. We talked about computers. We talked about how to sort of fix some of these things for people. Let's talk a little bit about the mold again. So I live in Costa Rica. The humidity here is 80%+. And where did we find mold in my house, and how would I fix it? And where do other people usually see mold in their houses?
So mold needs three things to grow. It needs a food source, which is going to be any organic material. So that could be wood, paper, leaves, dead skin cells, insect parts, anything that it could eat. And then it needs moisture or water. So it needs higher humidity, usually typically above 80% humidity, or an actual leak or a flooding type of event. And then we need mold spores. And so since we have mold spores pretty much all over in our environment, we can either take away the moisture or we can take away the food source. Now, since you live in a really high humidity area, we really have to focus on taking away the food source. So what does that mean? That means we don't build our homes with drywall, with paper, with wood, and we clean very good. So even though it could be maybe concrete or tile surface, it could have what's called biofilm over it. And that's just particles that come from the jungle and from dead skin cells. And the mold can eat the biofilm, which could be growing on tile or concrete. But that's where it comes in with a really good deep clean. So staying on top of your cleaning and not bringing in materials that mold can eat. So in your situation, we found mold growing on the wood cabinetry around all of the sinks and the kitchen.
Now, thankfully, most of my house, 99% of my house, is made from concrete block. So my walls don't have mold. I think it's all concrete block, actually, or concrete, you know, hanging. So that's good. And that's why I thought, oh, I'm not going to have mold. But it turns out that basically all the wood surfaces in my house that are not open air had mold.
Right.
And thankfully, I guess the good news is that because I live in Costa Rica, my house is mostly open air and I have a lot of airflow. But for me, it means that I'm going to soon have to rip out all of the wood in my house and replace it with concrete. And then I think about places in the world where there's humidity and all the houses are built with drywall. And it's just, and the houses are not open air. There are so few places in the world where you can have an open air house and the temperature is so tightly, you know, regulated just naturally. And these houses are now environmentally conscious, quote unquote. So they're saving energy, which means there's very little air circulation. So what, I mean, in the United States, let's just talk about the United States. I know you've looked at homes all over the world, but in the United States, which is where most of the audience is, what do you generally see as the state of affairs of homes that you go into in the US in terms of a mold issue?
Yeah, you know, and you bring up a good point about the ventilation and everything. I would say that hundreds of millions, if not billions of people are affected by mold right now, and they don't even realize it. At some level, it's affecting their health. Now, some people are very sick. I've seen cancer patients we've gone in where their home was just riddled with mold, where I'm sure that's what caused it. And unfortunately, some of these could have been avoided, you know, and that's kind of the sad story. But what we're seeing in the United States, to answer your question, is a lot of these homes are really airtight in an effort to be energy efficient. The problem is now these homes aren't breathing. So now we have this hermetically sealed building, airtight, and we have food source for mold, which is the drywall, which that's like cheesecake for mold. I mean, they eat that stuff up. Anybody that's ever done any remodeling or tearing down homes, they know that's where you see the mold is on the back of the drywall every time. So now we have an airtight home. We have food for mold. And now if you live in a humidity area or an area where you get a lot of rain or we get a little flood, now we have the perfect recipe for mold.
So I'm like bristling. I'm fearful because I remember when I went to residency in Seattle, super wet place, right? I lived in apartments for the first few years. And first year of my residency in Seattle, I'm an intern. I'm doing super long shifts on my medicine medications and big rainstorm. And of course, the lady upstairs, toilet floods and my room floods and there's water coming through the ceiling. And I'm just, there must have been so much mold in that apartment and carpets on the floors. Mm. And, you know, they come in and they use fans and they dry it out, but it's like drywall, carpet, ceiling, flooding. It's just to think like the amount of mold that I was exposed to in Seattle in every single building that I was in was probably in like insane amounts of mold. And I think I grew up in Virginia, humid drywall. This is crazy to think, Ryan, that like so many apartments that I've lived in, if you have neighbors above you, it just seems like more often than not, their toilet would overflow and they would flood us from below. It happened in multiple apartments where I was in Seattle with above neighbors, even just like condos or apartments. It happens so often that things flood and we don't know. Even this house in Costa Rica I bought, I didn't even know that the sink in the kitchen had a leak. And when we were looking under the sink in the kitchen, there's probably some black mold there where there's water that leaked into a wall. And because I was looking at repairing things when I got the house, I did repair the leak in the wall, but now I've got mold under my sink in my kitchen from a leak that I didn't even know about. People didn't tell me about when I bought it. And it's just, it's everywhere. So, I mean, is there hope for mold for people that live in the US? Like, what the heck is anyone supposed to do about this?
Yeah, but there needs to be some drastic changes in the way that we design and build our buildings. There's a term, are you familiar with the term sick building syndrome?
Yeah.
Yeah, very real term. It's becoming more and more common term now. It's because of the way that we are building our homes is not conducive to great health. It's made to, let's build this home as fast as we can, as cheap as we can, make it look nice, square footage, but we're not thinking about how can we build this home healthy? How can we make it so that it's mold proof? How can we make it so that it's EMF proof and use low chemicals and no off-gassing? So that's really what it comes down to, is we need to have a big shift in the way that we view our buildings. And now where you live here, I think it kind of saved your butt. You would probably be a lot more sicker because you have quite a bit of mold in your house. But since you have a lot of ventilation and you have an open air house, those toxins that are coming off the mold are getting flushed right out the door. Now, if this home was in the United States where it was all sealed up and airtight with no ventilation, all those biotoxins would just been building up, and you would just breathe them in and you would probably be a lot more sick.
It's crazy to think about. And I have so many friends who have had mold toxicity. And I mean, I've had friends move away from Texas because of mold, and it's just an interesting thing. So the mold stuff is tough and it's pervasive. It's just, it's hard if I'm traveling and I'm renting and I'm in Airbnbs, I'm not going to fix mold. But it's made me think differently about any house that I would build or buy in the future anywhere in the world. I would be very careful about any surfaces and ventilation and checking things. And so, I mean, we were joking about this yesterday when you were walking around my house, and I was just thinking like, wow, the next time when you buy a house, your realtor is just got to think you're, you know, crazy. Because we were walking around my house testing everything, but it's, that's the level, like the level at which you are examining my house is really the level that I wish I'd examined every house that I'd ever lived in, every house that I'd ever bought before I bought it, so that I knew both what was around it in terms of cell antennas, we haven't even talked about that yet, what was in the house and like what I was really getting myself into. I think we buy and rent houses based on, oh, it's pretty and it has a good view. And there's so many other environmental factors that can affect our health.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really crazy that when you buy a home, typically you're going to have a building inspector come in and they're going to inspect for safety hazards. They're going to inspect for cosmetic structural issues, but no one's ever thinking about the health inspection. So, and that's what our company does. We go in and do a full analysis based on health. But to me, that should be the first thing. Let's make sure this home is healthy. Then let's make sure it's safe and structurally sound and everything. Because if it's not healthy, I'm not even going to think about moving in here. Because if I move into this home and now me and my family become sick and I can't go to work and now I got to detox going down that, or I get cancer or something, that's just unthinkable. So, you know, it's kind of blows me away that people aren't thinking about that first.
Now, I need to insert this caveat disclaimer into the podcast at this point. I did a previous video on YouTube about toxins in the home and it wasn't nearly as detailed as we've looked at my home. But that video didn't get a lot of engagement. I think it didn't get a lot of engagement because people were overwhelmed. So this video, this podcast is not meant to overwhelm anyone. It's just meant to empower you guys and let you know that there are ways to examine for these things in your house. I believe knowledge is power. And any one of these things that you correct will improve your health. And you made me think about this with what you just said. This is not like trivial stuff. This is like the potential of increasing cancer risk. This is the potential of creating behavioral problems or improvements in behavior. So academic performance in adults, job performance, revenue generation, kids' performance in schools. There's a lot of talk today about longevity, and I have never, ever heard anyone in the longevity space talk about environmental issues in longevity. But this is, I think, one of the biggest impacts on longevity is if you're breathing mold, if you're exposed to EMFs, if you're exposed to other electrical issues that we'll talk about, if you're exposed to lighting, these are absolutely going to affect your longevity because cancer is longevity, right? Like, yeah. You know, there's a lot of discussion around how to lower your cancer risk today. Well, I've never heard anyone in those longevity quote circles talk about any of these issues, which is crazy to me. And it makes me excited that we can actually have this conversation, get it out there. So let's talk about electrical stuff because this is the reason we got connected. Our mutual friend messages me and says, hey, we found an electrical wiring issue in the house. And I'm not an electrician. I don't even know what he's talking about. Okay. And it was right by where our dog sleeps. And we think this is why the dog got cancer. And I thought, oh shit, like I've got a dog. I want to have kids one day. Maybe I'm sleeping next to something that's an electrical wiring issue. So talk to me about these electrical wiring issues and what we found in this house and how to correct it. Because this is, and maybe tell the story of what you found in this person's house.
Yeah. You know, and actually it was the first dog had died 2 years previous that he had from cancer. And it was a 2-year-old dog and they fed it.
A 2-year-old.
Yeah. Very brand new dog. And they took care of, you know, these guys, they take care of their dogs. I mean, feed them the best, walk them, very nice place. So the second dog now develops the same type of cancer in the same home. So they're thinking, okay, what's going on? They're smart. Something's going on with the house. Because there's no way that this has happened twice. So they get a hold of me. I come out there. And we go through the whole analysis of the home and we find that there was a wiring error when they installed the hot tub, something with the grounding issue. And we had a professional electrician come in and he was able to fix it. But there was something going on with the wiring of the hot tub, which created a huge magnetic field. So the type of levels that you would find directly underneath one of these high voltage power lines. So at the point where there's studies that show the direct correlation with this, we're not guessing at these levels. We know they're dangerous. And so we were able to fix that. Fortunately, the second dog, I believe, didn't make it. But fortunately, we were able to catch it so it didn't affect them, you know, and future pets in their house as well.
I remember when I was growing up in Vienna, Virginia, there was a trail called the W-O-N-D bike trail or W-N-O-D bike trail. And I used to go down and run on it. And right above that trail are the high voltage power lines for miles. And thankfully I was only running on it occasionally, but I would just, you could hear these power lines, you could zipping around. There's houses right there by these, no, I'm not talking small, these are like the biggest high voltage power lines, right? There's a trail and there's houses within a couple hundred feet of the, and you think, okay, this is not safe. But what you're saying there, I want to reiterate, I want to emphasize that there is a significant amount of evidence to suggest that being in and around these high voltage power lines or amounts of magnetic field equivalent to what is in these is cancer causing for humans. And the people who work on these power lines are paid more and there are settlements paid out for millions of dollars when they develop cancers, right?
Yeah. No, I have a friend that the brother was working on these lines, and he developed brain tumor in his 50s, and his family got paid out very well, and it was kind of understood in that industry that, you know, this is a risk that happens, and, you know, we'll take it, we'll take care of you if you end up getting tumors from this stuff.
So what have we found in my house?
So in your house, we did find some wiring errors associated with some of the lighting, which we're going to track down and get to deeper and figure out exactly what's causing that. But typically when we see ground-to-ground neutrals or wiring errors, neutral-to-neutral errors, it creates the magnetic field that radiates out into the room. And I mean, I probably don't want to get too deep with that, why it causes that, but just know that when you have a home that's not wired correctly, then we have these types of issues.
And this is the type of thing that I would never have suspected. I would never have understood that. I plug a lamp into the outlet, it works. But there's a wiring error creating an unseen magnetic field. Mine wasn't as bad as our friend's, but it was still significant, so that when you flip on the outside lights on my deck, there's about half of what they had in their house. And if I had a child that was playing there or lived there, you know, you could have a significant exposure. Now, thankfully, there was nothing like that in my bedroom, which is what I was worried about. But there were other issues in my bedroom. So let's talk about grounding. And this is interesting, guys. I was wrong about grounding, and Ryan corrected me. So I'm interested in grounding and earthing, and I did a previous podcast with Clint Ober. And I think that what I've learned from you and what I'm learning about grounding is touching the earth, whether it's grass or rock or ocean with your bare skin, is earthing. And this is a real thing, right? Again, we're not back in hippie land here.
Right.
Okay. But what was wrong with my grounding mats?
So we need to make a distinction. There's earthing and there's grounding, and they're completely separate. And people get those mixed up all the time. It's the biggest misconception I run across. Earthing is when, like you said, you're physically touching the earth through your lawn or the beach or the grass, the dirt. Grounding is a term with the electrical system of your home. So when you plug into the ground, that's like the sewer or the waste system of your electrical system. Everything dumps stray current and dirty electricity onto the grounding system to get routed back to the power company. Now, on the grounding systems of our homes, we have a ton of interference. So the last thing that we want to do is be connecting ourselves physically and electrically to the grounding system of our electrical grid of our home. We want to connect to earth, not ground. And so those two things need to be kept separate. Earthing good, grounding bad.
Which is interesting, because I wasn't aware of that nuance, and I was plugging grounding mats into the ground and the outlets. And I've been doing this in Airbnbs. Not a good thing. And so we'll put a video in here of us showing this dirty electricity with these grounding mats. And you can hear it with wires.
So as you can see, as we get onto this mat, look how much interference that we have coming off this mat versus over here, no mat, it's clean. Now I want to show how this travels onto the body. Now hold out your hand, okay? Now put your hand on the mat. See how that energy now is going through the body? That's bad negative energy.
And what I'm working on now, and we'll see how this works, again, I'm just turning into an actual caveman. What we talked about is I actually want to use the earthing mats, but I'm going to run an actual cable from the earthing mat into the earth, yes, rather than putting it in the ground in my house. And you said there are more sophisticated ways. You can talk to an electrician and have an outlet that's a dedicated grounding outlet that runs no other electricity. You can actually have an electrician come and make this. But generally speaking, these outlets that are grounded are not clean enough. There's a bunch of dirty electricity, this interference, and I'm just connecting myself to that. So now as we speak, I'm working on basically throwing a wire out my bedroom window and putting it in the freaking ground to actually earth while I'm sleeping. And that seems to be the only way to do it.
Yes, that's the way you want to do it. But there's one other nuance too to this that we want to talk about. And now if you ground yourself to the grounding system electrical and also or to the earth, there's one more thing that we got to do, and that's turn the circuits off in the sleeping area. The problem is, and we can demonstrate this with the video as well, is that when we're sleeping in our bed and we have the electrical wiring that's behind the bed and it's energized, it's radiating out electric fields 6 to 8 feet. So when we're laying there, our heads can be within a foot of this wiring. What happens now if we ground ourselves is we make ourselves part of the circuit, to where that circuit, that current can now travel through our body, through the ground. We're essentially making ourselves into a lightning rod, and the charged electrons will say, oh, look, there's a path back to ground. They're lazy. They want to find the easiest source, the direct path. And now if we ground ourselves with an electrical current nearby, it's going to flow through our body. So we have to turn the circuits off. We have to physically connect to earth. Then you're going to be doing it correctly.
And so we'll show a video of this. You have a body voltmeter, voltage meter, right? And I can lay in my bed and we can measure my body voltage, which is essentially, if I understand this correctly, the amount of charge that I'm carrying in my body.
Yes.
And I want that to be as low as possible.
Yes.
And if I'm grounding myself to the earth with an actual correct grounding mat, with something that's actually not going to an outlet, but it's going directly into the earth, we don't want the outlets near my head or near my body in the room to be on at night so that electrons aren't just like skipping into that circuit.
Correct.
Yep. And this is interesting. So now we're getting, I mean, if I hadn't seen the science, I would think we were getting pretty tinfoil hat now, man. Like now I'm, but it's interesting to me because it's empowering and knowledge is power. And I feel it feels very cool and very meaningful to me to understand like, okay, I can flip this breaker in my house at night and cut the circuits in my room. And I can literally see, we measured this yesterday, my body voltage go down when the circuits around my body are off at night. And I, like your sense was that's definitely going to affect the quality of my sleep.
For sure. 100%.
Yeah. And so I think that those two are probably the biggest things that I did wrong with my sleep is I was using a grounding mat incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't thinking about all of the outlets that were near my body while I was sleeping.
Yep.
And this is interesting because, you know, I have a friend in Texas and I've been to his house and he turns off the whole power in his house at night. And I thought, wow, these guys are pretty intense, but they're actually pretty smart.
Yeah.
And at his house, he has no Wi-Fi. And they use Ethernet to iPhone cables. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm just doing it. Just like, when I first thought, I was like, wow, they're pretty intense, you know? But now I think like, okay, they know what they're doing. They turn all the power off in their whole house at night.
Yeah, and you know why people like that and myself and other people go to those great lengths is because once you start doing this and you start leveling up, you start thinking more clearly, having more energy, sleeping better, just your whole bodily functions work better. Like, wow, I like this. I want to keep doing this. And so you go to those great lengths to do that. And honestly, once you get in that groove and start getting used to it, it's not a big deal. It's just that initial setting up and a little change of the way you look at it and you're off and running, but it makes such a big impact.
I mean, I'm going to have a lot to explain to any future girlfriends when they come to my house, but it's just weeding people out because any woman that I'm going to date is going to have to be cool with like, I don't even really like the word biohacking, but right now we're going to talk about light in a moment. But I mean, at night, I have only red lights in my house, which are not as good as I thought, but we'll talk about why. And again, there's already a lot to explain when friends or dates come to my house and there's going to be even more now. I just imagine the next woman I date saying, why is there a wire going from your bed outside? And it'll be an interesting conversation starter. Well,
and I think the thing is that you're a little bit ahead of your time with this stuff. Let's go back 60 years ago and have the conversation about cigarettes. We're like, you know what? I don't think it's a good idea to smoke cigarettes in my house. I'm going to tell people that let's smoke cigarettes outside. Let's not smoke in the living room. And that would be weird 60, 70 years ago. But now, no one would even think about lighting up a cigarette in your house. You know, I think the same kind of mentality is going to be coming towards with EMF into the future. We're going to look at that like, you are exposing me to something that's causing me cancer. That's something that you want to be respectful of.
Or brain fog or behavioral issues or
absolutely
brain fatigue. I mean, it's just the upside here is enormous. And the downside, I mean, it's an effort, it's intention, but the downside is just not that bad.
Yeah.
And it's not that significant. So let's talk a little bit about light because this is really cool. And I want to put a video in the podcast of this too. So at night, the sun sets around 5:30 or 6 here in Costa Rica. I turn on red lights and I don't like LED bulbs because I know, and I was incorrect in this assumption, I believe that all LED bulbs flickered a lot, right? Because I've seen LED bulbs and if you film with an iPhone, you can see them flickering in the iPhone. And I knew that LEDs flickered. So I didn't want LED red lights. So I thought I was doing a great thing. I got incandescent red lights. I thought I was so cool. And you brought a flicker meter,
yeah.
Right? So tell me about my incandescent red lights with the flicker meter.
So the problem is they're running off AC current, which is cycling positive, negative 60 times a second. And so it's still vibrating at 60 times a second. When we get into more like 100 watt or halogen or more high power where it creates a consistent glow, then it's more like the sun. But I believe that was a 40 watt that we were measuring red light. So it was still flickering. Now, I believe in the way you're using it is correct because we do want to minimize the blue light because that's what's suppressing the melatonin. And we want melatonin when we're getting ready for bed. That helps us sleep and repair. So by taking out that blue light, you have a win there. Now, where the flicker rate comes in is it affects people like the stressor. And so people are like, oh, I don't like the bright light. Really, what they're saying, they don't like the flicker rate because the sun doesn't bother them. Then when they go out in the sun, it's fine. It's when they have all the bright lights on in their house and they're just, I don't like how that feels. That's the flicker rate that you're feeling. It can cause anxiety, it can cause stress.
And that's super interesting because you feel it. I think most people listening to this podcast can probably feel how shitty it feels to walk into a gas station bathroom with a bad blue light fluorescent bulb and it's flickering and you can't really tell, but it just feels horrible.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I want my evening time to be as restful as possible. So you told me there actually are companies that make LED bulbs that are film quality that don't flicker. So I'm going to get some red LED bulbs that don't flicker and replace my incandescents, which are still flickering. As we were doing those experiments yesterday, one of the most interesting things was the difference in flicker between the Retina display on my Apple computer and my iPhone. Tell me about that.
So the Retina display on the Apple is designed to not flicker. They do that for a reason because they know that it's not good for us. And that's one of the things that they kind of advertise. This is a healthy screen to look at. There are also other work computer screens, flat screens that are designed when you're looking at them for long periods of time that don't flicker because the science is out there on that as well. The flicker rate does cause a lot of issues.
What about the iPhone?
So the iPhone had flicker rate on it. Yeah.
It was intense.
Yeah.
The iPhone was flickering bad. Yeah. And we'll put the video about this, but there was a sonic component that I could correlate with the rate of flicker. And the iPhone sounded like it was flickering very fast.
So this meter here tells us how much flicker rate. We can hear it as a sound.
Yes. Yeah. So if you're one of those people that lay in bed and scroll Instagram and you put it down and you have trouble getting back to sleep or getting to sleep or you just don't feel good after, that could be one of the main reasons.
So the iPhone is the devil.
There's a lot of things about it that are not good.
I'm gonna go.
But I mean, I have one. You have one.
I have one. So no, not for long. Evil, not for long. I'm throwing it in the ocean after this podcast. I'm gonna be walking around and hippie clothes and loincloths.
Well, you're not far from it here.
I know. But this is the other thing that I wanted to point out is that hopefully some people listening to this podcast have been camping. I think that the number of people that have actually been true camping is lower and lower. And I mean backpacking, not car camping, guys. Although car camping is probably better than regular, than nothing. But like you could go glamping too. But like I think most people know, and there's probably a lot of components to camping that make us feel good, whether it's I'm in nature, I'm Shinrin Yoku, I'm forest bathing, I'm grounding a little bit if I'm walking barefoot when I'm camping. But I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. I've talked about this many times for 3.5 months in the year 2000. It was a lifetime ago. And I slept on the ground. Now I was not grounded because I had a little foam mat, but I slept on the ground and I was completely away from technology. And I was probably in the woods for months and months and months. The majority of my time, I was not exposed to EMF. I was not exposed to magnetic issues. You know, none of these things were a problem. And I think that anyone who's been camping can hopefully correlate that, like, okay, maybe one of the reasons I feel so good when I'm surfing, when I'm hiking, right? When I'm in the jungle, when I'm in the forest, is that you're away from all these other things that are concentrated at your house, right?
Yeah. And that's what I tell my clients a lot of time when I first interact with them, like, man, I'm just not feeling well. I don't know what it is. I've gone to all these different doctors. I've tweaked my diet. I've done all the fitness stuff. What in the heck could it be? I tell them, look, go camping, go to the beach, go to the lake, get yourself away from all of the technology, away from all the synthetic things, the chemicals, the synthetic lighting, the EMF, potential for mold in your house. There's so many things in the home that cause these issues that you can simply get away from if you go out in nature. Now, like you said, glamping doesn't necessarily count. Don't take the RV and go plug it in an RV park because you're still energized, you're still having all the same things. True, real camping when you get out in nature. And I find that when people actually do that, they say, wow, yes, I do feel better in these places. I do notice a difference. And that what it is it's your body saying, hey, I evolved in nature. I love being in nature. I love natural things. Please give me more of that. It's our body pushing back. It's our body trying to tell us something. We need to listen to that.
You sound like a hippie, but I love it. And you're right. I agree with you. I sound like a hippie too. And it's like, man, I get it. It's like, this is... As trite as the word has become, it's an ancestral type perspective. It's an evolutionarily consistent perspective. And I think a lot about food and biochemistry. And this has really opened my eyes, or is continuing to open my eyes, regarding our environment. And like, this is my cave, right? This is where I live. And one of the reasons that I live in Costa Rica is because I can look at the ocean, I can be in the jungle, and the background levels, a lot of the stuff are good. But even with all those things, the home that I'm in, despite intentionality, still has a lot of issues that I have to fix. So we talked about We talked about phones and Wi-Fi and computers. We talked about electrical stuff. We talked about mold and light. We haven't talked about a few. What have we left out?
Chemicals usage.
Yeah.
Chemical usage is a big one. Now, you're pretty careful here. I mean, we got ants, insects, weeds, and things. It's all natural. But a lot of people's homes in the United States are, their lawns are perfectly manicured. And when you see something like that, all I think, how much chemical did you have to put on that to make it look like that? They see one little spider and it scares the crap out of them. They want to dose their whole house with pesticides. They want their home to smell great, so they get the Glade plug-ins and all the fragrances. They want to look a certain way. They dye their hair. They use chemicals on their body, personal care products, deodorants. They're washing their sheets and their clothing and these toxic chemicals. So you're bathing yourselves. And the routes of people don't think of how much you can actually absorb through your skin. So if I were to wash this, and then in Tide, and then do some dryer sheets, and then I put it on my body and I wear it all day long, I'm absorbing those chemicals into my body. That's messing with my hormones and endocrine disruptors. And so reducing the chemical load on our body is so important, and we're just not getting that in the United States. There's so many chemicals. There's over 80,000 chemicals known in production. Now, only a fraction, 7% have fully been tested on humans from the study I was looking at recently, and none of them have been measured and studied in combination with each other. They're only studied individually. Now, the average female uses, well, I think it was like something like 15 or 17 personal care products daily. The average male uses 6 or 8 on their body. And so when we see these chemicals interacting with each other and then interacting with our own natural chemical, what is that doing? We don't know. When you mix bleach and ammonia together, it makes chloramine gas. It can kill you pretty quickly. And so just think of this toxic soup that we have. Now, you talk about, you know, living here in Costa Rica, it's inherently a lot more healthier because we don't have a lot of that stuff. So just, and that's one thing, you know, from being here in the last couple of days and looking out and seeing how people live, they're more in tune with nature. Just the lifestyle here is more conducive to a healthy lifestyle because it's how our bodies were designed to live on this planet.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of my main issues when I go to Airbnbs is the Glade plugins, which I immediately throw a temper tantrum and smash and throw in the garbage and throw into the neighbor's yard and just run over with my car a million times because I'm so triggered and angry. And the sheets that are washed and tied. And I've talked about this in the past on social media, but for people that don't know, I wash my dishes with baking soda. I do not run my dishwasher. In fact, I'm probably just going to rip it out and donate it to someone as I rip out my wood undersink. So I wash my dishes by hand with baking soda. I wash my clothes in vinegar exclusively. It's been the easiest hack for me. And maybe it's just a guy thing, but I think the clothes don't smell, the dishes are clean, and they're fine. And actually, I think there's some evidence that using a dishwasher is negative for the microbiome. I think there is some evidence, epidemiologic evidence, that not using a dishwasher, washing your dishes by your hand, people had higher rates of biodiversity because you're getting your dishes ultra-sterilized and too clean when you're dishwashing them. And we've talked about the fact that there are these things called alcohol ethoxylates in most dishwasher detergents, which are damaging for the human gut and end up as a film on the dishes. And so, at this point in the podcast, people are still listening. They're really going to think I'm crazy because when I go to Airbnbs, I won't use the dishes without rinsing them because the dishes haven't washed in their dishwasher detergent. I don't want the alcohol ethoxylates in my gut. So it's like you have to be a warrior. I don't even know if that's the best word. You have to be just very intentional about this stuff. And I'm happy to accept the moniker as like a crazy guy if people benefit from my experiments and my extremism. But I think that that's interesting because so at my house now, we didn't find any of that stuff. There were no VOCs, no volatile organic compounds, because I don't use any of that stuff. So that's good. So in that respect, I'm doing good. Have we left anything else out?
Ventilation, we talked on it a little bit. That's a big one we see in the States is that people's homes are so airtight and they're not getting enough ventilation in their house. And so they're all just breathing the same toxic soup. And then with the chemicals added and with the mold and the bacteria, it all kind of adds up to make this toxic soup. And so people really need to think about how can we ventilate our home. What's interesting, in a commercial building, it's required to have so much air exchange per person per hour. Now, in a residential setting, we don't have these codes so that they're not building these things into the residential homes. You have to ask for them as an upgrade. We see this more in the custom homes. But in your traditional everyday home where the majority of the people are living, we're not seeing fresh air coming into the house. So the only time we're getting fresh air is when you open up the door to go in and out of your house. When that's closed, it's a closed loop system. And that everyone's breathing the same air. That's another big problem that we see. The homes need to breathe more. Where that's definitely not a problem you have here because everything's wide open.
And because it's all wide open, I mean, I've got a lot of mold on my wood, but I can get rid of that and fix it. So it's all give and take. My home certainly is not perfect, but I think about that kind of stuff. And, you know, I just want people to understand, I've heard you talk on other podcasts about this LEED standard of buildings. And it was interesting for me, ironic, but not surprising, that talk to me a little about the LEED standard of buildings, because this is this like energy green, New York buildings get all hoity-toity about, oh, we're LEED standard buildings.
Yeah, there's a big difference between green building and healthy building. They do not coincide, unfortunately, in a lot of times. Green building is all about conserving energy, doing good for the planet, which is great. We want to do that. We want to conserve our resources. But there's a way to do it and do it healthy. And that's the one thing that they leave out with LEED. They're not testing for mold. They're not dealing with EMF. They're not talking about a lot of these things that are truly affecting our health. So there are some good things about that. But, you know, one of them is making the home airtight and not getting air ventilation. So that's one thing where they're missing the mark on. So I think it's really important that let's do be conscious of the resources of our planet, absolutely. But let's also make sure that we're being healthy about it.
And I've heard on other podcasts that a lot of times in these LEED buildings, they'll use reclaimed materials or low-quality materials, which are going to be moldy. Or it's just, It can be some of the worst buildings from a health perspective.
Right.
That's a green building. So again, it's, yeah.
Yeah, so you might be saving a tree here and there, but now you're burdening the healthcare system. You know, so it's one or the other, you know.
And humans, yeah. It's absolutely crazy and maddening. And yeah, and who knows where it all goes. But yeah, so, okay. So let's wrap up
Water.
Yeah, we got to talk about water.
Yeah.
Let's talk about
vibes. We're going to talk about vibes too.
Yeah, let's talk about water and vibes. So tell me about water. So my water comes from essentially a well. I'm really lucky, but we're going to test it. But a lot of people have water that comes from a city water.
Yes. So the problem with reclaimed city water is they're treating it just enough so that it doesn't get you sick. Now, when they do that, they're letting a whole range of chemicals come through and pharmaceuticals. A lot of people, when they're using pharmaceuticals or hormones or whatever, and a lot of them is excreted when they're going to the bathroom, that's not getting filtered out. So you're basically drinking your neighbor's Prozac when you're drinking out of your own sink. So not only that, but then we have the PFOAs, the forever chemicals, that they've now tested in over 99% of the water supply in America. So that is unfortunate because that's a big cancer-causing agent that causes a lot of issues.
And a hormonal disruptor.
A lot of issues with that. Yeah, and okay. It just doesn't go. It's forever chemical for a reason because it does not break down.
So my perspective on this is that there's a relatively easy fix, which is reverse osmosis and remineralization. Would you think that's a good way to go?
So I would. So in my home, personally, I have the first thing it does is it goes through my water softener. It takes out all the minerals. And then it goes through a KDM 55 and 77 carbon filtration system, which pulls out a good majority of any of the chemicals that's left over. Then from there, it goes to a submicron filter, and then it goes to the rest of my house that I shower and bathe, toilets. Now, the stuff that goes to the kitchen area that we're actually eating and drinking from goes through reverse osmosis, and then we inject hydrogen into it, and then it comes out, and then we structure it, and then we add minerals back into it.
That's an amazing system. Okay, so that's pretty good. So I think for most people who maybe can't go to that level, I mean, I'm sure you could help people set up that level if they wanted to. You could get, there are like countertop reverse osmosis filters on Amazon. I love this because you don't even have to, if you're renting, you can just buy a countertop reverse osmosis filter on Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's self-contained. You can have reverse osmosis and you can remineralize it. So it's more expensive than a Brita, but I think that the investment is worth it. It's probably about 10 times more expensive than a Brita, but it's getting way more out than a Brita. And I like this more than Berkey's, which still leave things in. But these countertop reverse osmosis filters, I think are amazing because if you're renting, you're not going to have the authority to go in and put all the reverse osmosis under the sink. If you own a house, put RO under your sink. I think ideally what you have is great. Whole house water should be filtered, but start at least with your drinking and your cooking water and then remineralize it. So water, I think people can fix, but I wouldn't drink tap water, and we've talked about that because I don't want to drink my neighbor's birth control pills.
Well, and you can, if you're the type that takes a nice hot steamy shower, likes to soak in your bathtub, you may be absorbing just as much that way as you are from drinking it. So you need to be conscious of that as well. Now, you know, it's funny, people tell them about what I have, like, oh my gosh, that's so overboard, that's crazy. I'm like, water is one of the most important things that we're putting into our body. It's our life force. We're made up majority of water. Why not make sure that that water is pure and healthy and as natural as possible? And I might have 10,000 invested in my water system, but that I can, if I move, I can take a lot of that stuff with me. And if that prevents me from health issues down the road, that's an investment that I'm willing to make. And that's, to me, that's not a big deal.
That's such a good investment.
I mean, yeah, it's a great investment.
It's an incredible investment. I mean, that's an insane investment. That's just like, that's a no-brainer for me too. So let's talk about vibes, because this came up we were, you know, I got my crew here. They're all behind the camera. Shout out to the crew. But we were upstairs showing the crew a lot of these things before the podcast. And this idea of vibes came up with humans. So now we are squarely in the realm of tinfoil hats and hippie land, but let's just roll with it.
Sure, yeah. And so one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of these electric fields, and maybe we can do a demonstration and clip that in, they transfer through the body. So our brainwave on our body, our heart, you can measure it with EKG and different machinery to know what our pulse is, what our frequency. We have our own frequency. You have your own frequency. Every individual that's listening has their own individual frequency. Now, you'll notice, like, if you hold hands with your spouse, your loved one, that, or you hug your kids, your family, you can feel that. There's an actual feeling there. That is something that we can measure. If we were to hook ourselves both up to an oscilloscope and read our readings, and then if we were to touch each other and hold hands, our frequencies would start to connect and they would start to align with each other, modulate together. Now, if we're doing that with someone that you are connected with, that feels good. Now, if you're in a room with someone that's in bad energy, in a bad mood, you can feel that. You can sense that. Go over and hold their hand and see what that feels like. It's going to feel like crap. So that is a real thing. That's a real electrical signal that we can measure. It's not pseudoscience. It's not, well, it might sound like it. But this is some real stuff that we can actually measure. So I find it fascinating that, you know, I think over the last 50 years, 60 years, 100 years, as we've electrified this planet, we went from a base level of zero EMF, where I think our bodies were a lot more in tune with each other, with nature, to where we would sense a lot more. Now we're being flooded with all of this unnatural EMF. I think our minds are kind of lost as far as that. I don't want to say telepathy, but in a sense, feeling that vibe from other people, feeling that feeling, and not just other people, but the planet, animals. There's a sense there. There is a sixth sense that is real, that's measurable, that I think we've lost because it's been drowned out with the flooding of EMF that we have in the world right now.
And I think when people go camping with their spouse or their girlfriend, like, before you marry someone, go camping with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess it's the... That's what makes me like feel someone's vibe in a non-electro smog, for lack of a more technical term, environment.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing. Yeah. So let's talk about Starlink a little bit. This came up in conversation. I want to make sure we talked about this because I think that some people, though I ragged on Elon for the cell phone helmet, I think some people might think that he's trying to just cook the world with Starlink. One of the things we did yesterday at my house was we turned off all the power, which is actually kind of empowering to think, like, that's a bad pun. Sorry, guys, unintentional. like, we turned off all the power. It was really cool. And we could measure the background levels of radio frequency, magnetic, all these things. And there wasn't much.
Yeah.
So at least in my house, Starlink isn't cooking me. So what do you think about Starlink and satellites? And
yeah, that's way overrated. People get a little out of control with the satellites and beaming energies and all that. But they're so far away. By the time they get to us, their levels are so low. It's a drop in the bucket compared to our cell phones and the routers and everything. Yeah, it's not an issue as far as exposure.
Do you think it's hard for them to figure out how to have the satellites fly around the flat Earth and not go around the edge?
Now we're getting out there. Let me get back to you.
How do they navigate the satellites without having them fly off the edge and in space, Brian?
they're connected to the ceiling.
Right
there.
They're hanging from the ceiling of the stage. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. The satellites aren't even real. There's actually no satellites. They're hanging from little fish. It's hanging from fish line. From the ceiling. That's what we decide. Okay.
Well, in the Matrix, you don't need that anyway.
So yeah, it's all simulation anyway. Yeah. Okay. Amazing. So what I've learned in this podcast is that the hippies are mostly right. And we should all be a little more hippie. You guys can't see it, but none of us is wearing shoes right now. Nobody filming this podcast is wearing a shirt. Ryan and I are wearing shirts because we're super professional. But
yeah, I thought we were going to do it with no shirts on.
Well, I try to fool my audience into thinking I'm sort of professional. But man, anything else you want to talk about before we go? Thank you so much for coming out. I've learned so much. I hope that people will check out your company and just learn about what you do and either empower themselves to do it themselves or have you come out and check out their homes. Because it's like I said, it's kind of, you know, it's the same as kind of like what you invested in with your water filter. It's just such a good investment, I think, especially if somebody owns their home and they're going to be somewhere long-term. But
yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I want to maybe leave with just a couple quick actionable items because now that we scared the crap out of everybody and got them all scared of their home. You know, I think taking off your shoes, going into your house, not tracking outdoor stuff. And, you know, when you go fill up your car with gas and you walk through the grocery store, go to the bathroom. There's so many nasty things that we get on our shoes. And then we bring those in, especially if you have little ones that are crawling on the ground. That, I think, in the United States is a big thing that people don't do is leave those shoes at the door. That's going to help keep your house really clean. That's something free that you can implement right away. If you live in an area that doesn't have high humidity, open your doors and windows at least 15 minutes a day in the morning and at night to flush out, even if it's cold or if it's hot outside, open those windows up, flush that out, make sure we're getting fresh air in the home. If you have plastics in your home, try to reduce as much of the plastics that you're eating out of in your kitchen. Just go through your kitchen. You know, we want to use stainless steel, we want to use glass, we want to use wood, but we don't want those plastics in the house. There's a website called EWG, Environmental Working Group, that you can go on and you can vet your products. And I think it would be a fun Saturday activity to go through your house and just scan the barcodes of all your stuff. And I would say, you know, everything that's in the green, let's keep it. Everything that's, you know, yellow, orange, or hazardous, let's give it away or donate or whatever you want to do with it. But, you know, try to start purging your home of the toxins and the chemicals that you don't really need and have in your house. Simplify. A lot of things can be cleaned with baking soda, vinegar, water. I put a little lemon essential oil in there so we don't get the vinegar smell. You know, turning off the electronics when you're not using them. That's a really big one. If you have, let's say the Xbox is sitting there and you only use it once a week, but the controllers and everything that's on is sitting there radiating in the whole living room and your kids are sitting there playing, they're being exposed to this for no reason. Turn off these electronics when you're not using them. Also, putting the phone on airplane mode at night. That's a real big one, and making sure we're doing it the right way. If it's whited out, you actually have to go into the settings of Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and actually turn it off in the settings. At night, and as far as the sun goes, try to mimic your lighting with the sun. So if the sun is out, full middle of the day, have your bright lights on, no big deal. But once that sun starts to go down and you start to see the red and the oranges in the sky, that's going to be your cue to start turning your lights down inside of your house and transition over to more of the amber colored lights. And then at night, if you got to get up to go to the bathroom or whatever, I highly recommend is using red lights so you're not really messing up your circadian rhythm too much. Make sure you're getting your water filtered, at least the water that you're cooking and drinking in. You know, if you need to buy that from the store for now, try to get it from the glass bottles if you can. You know, but ultimately, if you can get an RO system for the drinking water, I mean, hopefully those, you know, 10 or so tips, some really good takeaways for people that they can implement right now that really doesn't cost any money.
I love that. I think everybody can do that. Everybody can get an Ethernet cable if you want, turn off your Wi-Fi at night, not put your cell phone in your pocket unless it's on airplane mode, completely on airplane mode. There's a lot in this podcast that I think it is easily actionable for everyone. Mm-hmm. If you are working in a house where you don't want to use a Ethernet cable, you can get one of the bags like we talked about to put over the router or move yourself away from the router. Realize that that's going to really improve things, I think, long term. And then if there are, I think that, you know, there still are a lot of things in this podcast that people need to have specific attention to that you can't really do. But I think hopefully that's a good start for people. And it's amazing, man. Thank you so much for coming out.
Yeah, you bet, man.
Appreciate you mucho.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, so we're going to go film. We're going to go film some of these things to go in the podcast. And thanks for watching, guys. You guys, if you're watching on YouTube, if you like this content, if you think there's someone you know would enjoy this content, please share with people in your life who will benefit. I am able to make more content for you guys if you like and subscribe and share this video, and it helps us reach more people. So if you find this valuable, please like, please subscribe. I'll do more of it. And let me know in the comments on YouTube who you want me to have on the podcast in the future. And I'll see you guys soon. Thank you.
If I could throw something out real
quick. Yeah, do it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so we have a lot of really good content on our channel, Instagram. We're always filming, putting stuff out there. You know, if you're really interested in this, like, yes, I want to make my home more healthy. We have so much free stuff that you can go into that and spend hours and days and going through and really optimizing your home. Well, you'll get to a certain point where you need some consultation and help, and we do a phone consultation. We can come out to your house. We can do some full testing. So we try to make ourselves available for everybody. But the resources out there, our website is also testmyhome.com and testmyhome.info. We have a website. It's a home testing kit. If you want to learn how to do this stuff yourself, we can send you some of the equipment, go through a little training video series with you, and teach you how to test your own home, give you the power. So
amazing, bro.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.